Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's edition of the Jazz Jolt Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dowsett. I am joined today once again by Salt City Hoops editor Andy Larson, as well as Salt City Hoops writer Dan Clayton. How are you gentlemen doing today?
Doing well. Thanks, hey guys. Ben.
Pleasure as always.
As always. Now, today we have some very important topics to discuss. We are recording this on a Tuesday evening, and those of you who haven't been living under rocks are aware that yesterday, Monday that is, it was announced officially by the Jazz front office and Dennis Lindsay that Tyrone Corbin will no longer be the Jazz head coach moving forward. To many of us, especially at Salt City Hoops and anyone who really follows the Jazz, this was not an unexpected move of any kind, and even the timing itself was not in any way unexpected, as we knew that end-of-year meetings were taking place right around this time. But that said, there are always some things that take place within the press conferences, within the days leading up to something like this happening, that are, you know, some items of interest. And I think we kind of wanted to start there. I'll start with Andy, and then we'll go to Dan after that. Andy, what were some of your impressions of the proceedings, the events, anything that anybody said that maybe stuck out to you?
Yeah, I think there are a couple things. I mean, going back to the front office's opinion of Ty Corbin, Dennis Lindsay made it really clear that his issue wasn't with playing time, and that it wasn't with how Ty handled the young guys as much as it was kind of a philosophical and honestly performance sort of issue. And again, he recognized over and over again that he put them in Ty Corbin in an extremely tough position, but that being said, the results still weren't where they expected them to be, especially on defense, and you know, this shouldn't be a surprise for anyone who's followed the Jazz or followed Salt City Hoops over the last few months. But it is interesting to see that it wasn't the minute distribution that Dennis Lindsay was upset about, it was kind of the other factors. And then I think the second surprise to me was just that, and I don't know how much I believe this and how much of this is just press conference speak, but Dennis indicated that they didn't have any names on the board yet, so to speak. You know, they weren't even talking about the future of the coaching position to that point.
Right.
Yeah, because they wanted to choose to, you know, make a decision regarding Ty Corbin. You know, I think that everyone involved is smarter than that, but I do think that it indicates that there isn't really, you know, there's not one guy who I think that they will hire immediately. They are still waiting for everything to come on the table. They didn't want to rule anything out. And I don't know that you would necessarily go to such great lengths to do that if they didn't still have the possibility of adding more names to the board.
Definitely, and I think it speaks as many things with the Jazz front office to, you know, they do have a level of respect for Ty Corbin, and I think, you know, making it, you know, pretty much dismissing him and then having yes, names came up that we'll discuss in a moment as some of the front runners right away, but, you know, for them to say right away, like, yeah, we've got somebody in mind, would almost be a little bit of a slap to Ty, not completely, but in a way, saying, you know, like, we already knew what we were going to do here, we already knew that, you know, the tie was out, that sort of thing. So I think that's, anyone with a brain is definitely smart enough to see through that. Of course, they've been considering their options for longer than just since yesterday afternoon. Dan, what about you? Did you, following the event, maybe not even just of yesterday, but everything leading up to this, again, it's not an entire surprise, but were there any things that stood out to you?
Well, first, just to that point about, you know, names on the board, I do sort of believe him on the level of, they haven't been looking at options or considering names. You know, I think they wanted to come into this Ty Corbin meeting, you know, and make a fair evaluation, even if everyone was probably headed the same direction going in. But the reason I say right, kind of sarcastically, is because, I mean, come on. Dennis Lindsay's been in basketball for a long time. The Millers have. I mean, whether they've discussed it together for 17 seconds or not, you know, they have an idea of who are some people they like, and obviously those will get discussed in short order. To your other question, you know, as far as I was really interested in how open Lindsay was in talking about these, what he called clear philosophical differences. You don't often hear it articulated that way by GMs in the wake of one of these decisions. So I thought that was interesting. And yeah, Andy, I heard what you were mentioning as well. about how it's not about minutes or even broadly speaking about player development, because Dennis said that he's happy with where that went. So, you know, this morning David Locke spent some time opining or hypothesizing on what those philosophical differences were. And as much as I respect David Locke, I watched that podcast, and I don't think that the philosophical differences were about things like shot location or transition threes or defense in the corners. Like, I don't think it was anything that specific, because Dennis kept saying in the press conference, there are philosophical differences at the 5,000-foot level, right? And at the 5,000-foot level, I think the reason Ty Corbin is not the Jazz coach today is because there was a lack of identity, a lack of, you know, vision. And, you know, anybody who's been listening to me over the last few days and weeks won't be surprised by me saying that. I really think that for as many things as Corbin did well and as many things as he didn't do well or got criticized unfairly or got defended in a manner that doesn't pass the sniff test, to me, really the biggest thing to me is that there hasn't been much of an identity for the Jazz since he took over. And not all of that's on him because of the situation he inherited, the superstar trade, then the, you know, the Jeffer Jazz era and all the basketball-related flaws that came with relying on someone with Al Jefferson's basketball profile, and then the rebuild. But you still, as a coach, should be able to create some sense of purpose, and I think that that's probably what was missing. And at a 5,000-foot level, that's the biggest thing I see.
Yeah, yeah. I think there are also things, I mean, and of course I'm the one to say that it's so cliche, but I think there's things like analytics where the Ty Corbin's and his staff were pretty anti-stats, you know, from what I heard, kind of poo-pooed a lot of the synergy data that the front office sent their way. You know,
it's really unfortunate.
Kind of some of the stuff where they wanted a smarter, better, more kind of modern NBA coach in that chair.
Yeah, and I think that kind of – I would agree with both your points there. I think that, you know, and a lot of the reaction immediately – and we, you know, we know fans are going to be upset and things like that. But a lot of the reaction tried to – especially on Twitter and places like that – tried to delve into, you know, what are the very specific reasons behind this. And I think a few of the more level-headed folks, yourself included, Dan, were kind of just saying what you just said. You know, there are literally hundreds of variables that go from an X's and O's standpoint that go into a given basketball game and what a coach's responsibilities are for a given basketball team. And, you know, yeah, I suppose we could go down that list and get as specific as possible and note which areas he succeeded in and which areas he didn't. But in the end, that's and, you know, that teams do that, of course, but the overall picture, I think, is in this case was a little bit more important rather than go, you know, you can't just place one, you know, it was just the defensive rotations, and that's why Ty Corbin got fired. I think that's is obviously not the case.
Yeah. Yeah, or you know, we were 30th in the league in defending the corner three. Like, you know,
yeah.
Do I think that on a broader scale the defensive mentality of the Jazz was part of what was considered in making this decision? Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know that Dennis Lindsay got out his spreadsheets and sorted that way. I think again, it came down to, you know, did he create? We hear a lot about winning habits, right? Which is another way of saying the culture and identity thing. So if you don't like the terms culture and identity, let's use winning habits. I think that there was just a lack of. In fact, you know, the one thing that came up. And Andy, I don't know if you were there for this comment or have any thoughts about it, but they talked about practice. The practice wasn't even really done in a way that sort of reinforced winning basketball games. And, you know, I think that matters more than at the end of the day, how much of the, you know, above the break three-point shooting can you blame on Ty's schemes, and how much can you blame on players not rotating the right way, and how much can, you know, whatever. Like, I think that just goes in a way that is hard to make or defend a decision. I think that where you can definitely make a decision is by looking at sort of that philosophical purpose of what a coach is supposed to do. And did Ty Corbin accomplish that in, you know, three plus seasons that he had the chance to do that? And sadly, because I like the guy, but I don't think he really created that.
we talking about practice, man. No, sorry, I had to.
Yeah, we are. We're talking about practice.
I had to toss that in there after you said practice. But switching gears just a little bit now, you know, unfortunately, there has been a lot of talk about Ty, and I think most folks figured that this was likely going to be the result after this past season. So now that the decision has actually been made, we do need to also set our sights to the future, which, and I think everyone would be in some amount of agreement that it will be the relatively near future, because, of course, the Jazz are going to want to have a coaching staff well in place by the time it becomes time to start firmly scouting for the draft, you know, about a month before the draft or so, and the draft is late June. So there have been a plethora of names, of course, that have come up in the roughly 24 to, you know, 28 hours since we've heard about the official news of Ty, and I think at this point we can likely say there are at least, you know, in popular opinion at the moment, probably two favorites. I hate using the words front runners, whatever word you want to use, at least in the public perception. And those two would be Jim Boylan, who is the assistant coach of the San Jose Stars, exactly, right? The San Antonio Spurs, and was also formerly the head coach of the University of Utah basketball team, so folks around the Valley are certainly very well acquainted with him. And the other is, and I believe I'm saying this correctly, Ettore Messina, who's been rumored in Spursian circles, actually, as likely to be the first purebred European coach to jump directly to the NBA. It hasn't happened yet, but he's swirled around the Spurs and various things in recent years, and now that rumor has been reignited. I believe Mark Stein was actually the first person to tweet that out last night, unless I'm mistaken.
Hey, actually, in fairness, we got to give a hat tip to Ian Thompson of SI, who went on 1280 last week, and as far as I know, was the first guy to mention Ettore Messina in connection with the Jazz.
Okay.
Just credit where credit's due. Thompson.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
he gets the nod of the head if this actually happens.
Okay. Well, that's I'm glad Dan is here, because I didn't know that. I thought Stein was the first on it because I saw it on Twitter last night. But in that case, do we want to maybe start real briefly with Messina? I think there's a little more unknown with him, so we only maybe need to do a minute or two. But what would your guys' thoughts be there? I'll start with Dan on this one, because we started with Andy last time.
Oh, I love Messina. And actually, I don't think he's – I mean, he might be unknown from a fan perspective – here, because, you know, obviously most fans don't stay glued to their TV sets to watch ACB games in the middle of the night or Russian League games, but he's a pretty known commodity, and that's the thing that I hope fans realize, is that this guy is not a huge gamble. He's a two-time EuroLeague Coach of the Year, which EuroLeague, for those who don't know, that's the aggregate league that the best teams from all the European leagues get together and play this massive tournament to crown a European championship. He was the coach of the year twice in the EuroLeague. He was the coach of the year four times in the Italian league. The guy has coached Cesca. He's coached Real Madrid. He's won EuroLeague titles. He's a legitimate guy, and on top of that, I like his offensive philosophies. I've posted some videos on Twitter if people want to go take a look. But he's really big on ball movement, player movement, floor balance, a really motion-oriented offense. I think there's a lot to like about Messina. Andy?
Yeah, I don't know anything more than what you've honestly shown, Dan, other than, you know, Cesca Moscow and what kind of Mark Stein and the like have reported. Honestly, I think it makes a lot of sense if it's something the Jazz want to do, but for them to break that barrier would help the organization a lot. You know, it's risky, but I don't think it's the kind of risk that necessarily gets Dennis Lindsay fired if he makes a mistake on it. And I think there's a lot to like. I got to consider him at least one of my top candidates.
You go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to say, I think if you are talking about resumes in an all-encompassing manner, I think, to be honest, right now today, Ettore Messina is probably a better coach than, you know, half of the head coaches in the league. So a risk in terms of, you know, how culturally things will translate and will his style work with the salaries and egos in the NBA. I guess it's a risk on that level. But this is a guy with serious proven coaching ability in some of the best leagues outside of the U.S.
Yeah, I think those kind of issues about translation are issues that the Jazz are worried about. I mean, we've heard over and over again how one of the things Jazz like about Ty Corbin is his ability to keep a locker room together, and how, you know, he's kind of distributed that playing time in order to best get this kind of cohesion within the team. I think that is at least a little bit at risk with some culture issues, and honestly with how European coaches tend to distribute playing time far more evenly than NBA coaches do.
I think that's somewhat of a strategical thing, and parts of what we're talking about, and based on what I've heard Messina is fairly strict discipline-wise. He not cracks a whip necessarily, but definitely has both hands on the steering wheel. I don't necessarily think that would be a bad thing. I think that there's a small chance that the fact that Ty got along well with his players and managed the locker room well and things like that maybe gave players the slightest bit too much sense of comfort. I don't know. I might be just, you know, speaking out of the back of my head here, but I I potentially think that sort of thing could be very good for this young group that might need a little bit more of a kick in the butt, a little bit more of a firm direction to be going in.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, if we go back to this idea of identity and what's the vision of the coaching staff, and do the players buy in? Because, Ben, you and I have talked about this in the past. If you look at what makes a San Antonio team great under Greg Popovich, it's the fact that Tim Duncan takes a night off and Tony Parker takes a night off, and in come Patty Mills and Aaron Baines, and you can't even really tell the difference. I mean, okay, of course you can tell the difference when two probable Hall of Famers sit down, but just in terms of the execution, everything's just as crisp. Everything, you know, the same decisions are being made because everybody believes in what Pop is trying to build there. So absolutely, I think having someone that is assertive and knows what he's trying to accomplish, you know, could help. I don't know about the Ty thing. You know, did he lose the locker room, or did he have the locker room, or was he too strict or not strict enough? I think at the end of the day, what some players told us on media day probably indicates that he's not as much of a player's coach as maybe the script says. You know, some players had some legitimate beefs, it sounds like, coming out of the season.
Yeah, that's true. That was just a little bit of speculation from me, that maybe a little bit more of a taskmaster type of thing might benefit the young group, get them a little bit more in line. And of course, that's very hard to predict. It's complete speculation because you never know how a particular group of guys might react. But so we have Messina, and he's certainly a possibility. And of the two favorites, he would certainly be the one that I would prefer, because the other name currently involved, as I mentioned, is Jim Boylan, who is the current assistant coach of the San Antonio Spurs, and also was the coach of the Utah Utes. During his tenure, they went 32-32 in the Mountain West Conference, as you mentioned on Twitter yesterday, Dan. I'm going to save my opinions for a second here, because I want to hear what you guys have to say here as well. So, Andy, what would your thoughts be on Jim Boylan?
I'm excited to hear your opinions, Ben, just because you followed the U basketball more than I have. You know, honestly, I think his Spurs credentials are being overwritten a little bit. You know, there were two Spurs assistants hired last season, so he's really been in that top spot for only one season. I don't know that his NBA credentials are great before that. That being said, I trust Dennis Lindsay a lot. If he likes him, and, you know, I honestly don't know that much about him. I'm pretty uninformed. Dan, what do you have?
Was Dan there?
Guess not. Then Ben,
we may have lost Dan for a moment. Sorry about that, guys. But no, luckily I have some pretty concrete opinions on this, because I was actually just finishing up as a student at the University of Utah during Mr. Boylan's tenure there. I actually met him in person once or twice. Nothing to do with actual basketball or anything like that. So I can't claim any sort of insider knowledge. But you said two things, first of all, Andy, that resonated with me. The first one being the main one. Two Spurs coaches, assistant coaches, were hired last year. It's not like this guy has been a Pop assistant forever or something like that. And Pop probably has one of the highest two or three assistant coach turnover rates in the league, because guess what? Popovich is awesome, and all of his coaches end up doing really well in other places because they all get to learn from it. Now, that, I mean, that sounds like sort of an endorsement for Boylan, and that's not to say that the fact that Pop likes him is a bad thing. Of course, it's a good thing. Anything Pop likes is a good thing. But His time at the University of Utah was average would be the best word I could come up to find for it. Now,
no, use more words. I like it. Get it all out.
Well, you know, for somebody who's being considered as an NBA coach, I don't think it was anywhere close to good enough. You can't go 32-32 against a really mediocre basketball extremely mediocre basketball conference in the country for 3 years consecutively. He made one tournament appearance, and if I'm not mistaken, they lost in the first round. You know, the guy, he had a lot of problems with he would have some, who was that to put up the was it you, Dan, that put up a – are you back, Dan, by the way?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Was it you that put up that video of the best of Jim Boylan at Utah today?
It was Spencer Hall.
It was Spencer, yeah. Spencer, that's who.
A couple people shared that, actually.
Yeah, and that was that's not just like somebody finding the only examples of bad stuff he ever said and throwing it all into a YouTube video. That stuff was normal. He was the guy did not get along correctly with the media, which, you know, if you're not getting along with the media at the U, you are sure going to have some problems with us crazy people here covering the Jazz. He had issues with his players all the time. Overall, and here's my biggest thing, and you said it as well, Andy, I do trust Dennis Lindsay. I hope that I can. My main frustration was starting to build yesterday when I was beginning to hear these things, you know, from Spencer Checkets and from people on Twitter about how this is like, you know, Boylan is the big front runner, and how, you know, multiple sources very close to Lindsay are talking about how he is, you know, how it was almost starting to sound like a done deal. And, you know, of course I know that's not the case, and I know that Lindsay as a thorough guy is not going to just make a hire, you know, 16 hours after firing the last guy. But at the same time, the initial thing that came up in my head was, if this is a decision that happens quickly where Boylan is hired, even this week, I mean, I'm going to be frustrated if he's hired no matter what, to be completely honest. But if it were to happen quite quickly, I might have some real questions about kind of the process there and what's going on and the thinking of Lindsay in the front office specifically. Because if they go through, you know, a 3-week coach search period, they interview a few guys, they spend a lot of time on it, and then at the end of that they determine that for all these reasons Jim Boylan is the very best person to coach the Utah Jazz, then I will begrudgingly accept that as the case. But if they make a quick hiring of someone who's, you know, who has clearly known Lindsay in the past, not that that diminishes his credentials necessarily, but I think it's relevant, especially with, you know, Messina and several other names on the list, at least as potentials, and with this being, in my opinion, just an absolutely pivotal move for the Jazz going forward, I will be frustrated.
So a couple things there. One, because he is a Spurs assistant, you know, you can't make that move too quickly because he is on the Spurs bench actively coaching games at this point.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and they're
yeah.
in the playoffs. So
which Lindsay mentioned that, by the way.
Yeah, and so the second thing is that ultimately, I think even if Dennis Lindsay chooses Jim Boylan as a guy, he spoke about in the press conference yesterday that it's not just him making this decision. He talked about how the Miller family has veto power, if you will. Randy Rigby does, you know, and he will talk about this with the other people in his organization. I would be surprised, honestly, if the business people in this organization and the owners who are familiar with Utah, familiar with the community, let the Jim Boylan thing happen. I mean, given how the reaction has been from media, from fans, from et cetera, I think that Jim Boylan hiring would probably hurt the bottom line for the Jazz franchise, probably hurt the team's credibility locally, which has been hurting, especially in the face of a new professional rival in Real Salt Lake. you know, as a lot of these things kind of change, I don't know that a hiring with that low of credibility locally could pass muster for those guys. I know that's weird to say because the Jazz have always been about having roles, individual roles, to make decisions, but I would just be surprised if the Millers and the Rigbys, et cetera, allow that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, it would be a really interesting FU exercise to be you thought you disliked Ty Corbin, huh? And look, I say this like I'm a U of U alum, and I probably should follow the basketball team more than I have, but I've been so Jazz immersed for so many years with my various media roles that I didn't follow closely the Jim Boylan period up on the Hill. But I'm not excited, right? It's not a name that excites me. And it's not because of the YouTube video. I mean, I'm sure some idiot somewhere is putting together a YouTube video of my finer moments, and it's going to be equally embarrassing. So
honestly, the YouTube video makes me more excited about Jim Boylan. Like, I want to interview this guy all the time. Have him call out the people who I sit next to in the huddle who have the questionable questions. I don't know. I like that possibility of entertainment.
I guess for me, you know, look, if they hire him, it's because a bunch of really smart people have said this guy gets it. And if that happens, then I'll do my best to reach deep down inside and give him a chance. What doesn't convince me at all is the, oh, he sat next to Popovich for a year argument. Because, and as I joked today on Twitter, you know, the Jazz are in the middle of drawing the chalk outline around the guy who sat and learned from Jerry Sloan by osmosis. So if sitting a couple seats down the bench from someone was a guarantee that someone's going to be Jerry Sloan 2.0 or Greg Popovich 2.0, then we wouldn't be having a coach search conversation right now. So the Pop logic, as much as I respect and admire and I'm jealous of San Antonio because they have a guy like Pop, like, please, look, stop giving me that defense. If Dennis comes out and says, you know, we hired this guy because I know him and I can tell you that he's not as much of an idiot as he looks like on YouTube and he understands basketball, then that will work for me. What will not work for me is, but he's been at San Antonio. I don't really care, you know. And until someone can prove that intelligence can pass by osmosis down an NBA bench, you know, that argument just doesn't hold a lot for me. Especially while they're showing Ty Corbin the door, who was Jerry Sloan's understudy.
Yeah, yeah, and if I may real briefly, and we've already gone just a little bit over the time, and, you know, after we do this, we'll maybe throw out a couple other names of people who, just for a minute or two, of who we might, besides these two candidates, who we think are possibles. But one, the thing that, and it kind of speaks to what you both are kind of saying about and specifically Andy, what you said about what local reaction might be. That was actually one area that I was really pleased to see. When I first started hearing Boylan as the rumors, and Andy, you know, I sent you a text about this right in the middle of when it was happening, because I was going to lose my mind. I heard that the names I heard were, I heard him, and then I heard David Rose of BYU. I heard Howard Eisley. I heard John Stockton, and I heard Karl Malone. And, of course, I knew people were going to bring up those last two names, and it's like, you know, I can deal with that. But, like, when I'm hearing Dave Rose, who, for those who don't know, is the head coach at BYU, you know, I was seriously close to losing my mind, because I was getting to the point where I was just like, are we really going to do this again? This whole sort of Utah mob mentality that there needs to be somebody with some kind of a connection to the Jazz or to the state of Utah or to the Utes or to whatever. I was going to lose it, because that is such a spurious point. Why in the world do we need to have are we that prideful of a group of people as a fan base or whatever that we feel some need, validated need, to have one of our own involved with the team or something like that? The point I made on Twitter yesterday is, folks, this is an NBA basketball team, not a fraternity. And you know, that to me, that stood in it. But I was then happy when I started seeing some of the larger outcry once Boylan's name emerged as a huge candidate, people saying, wait, the guy who went 500 at the U is going to be the Jazz's coach now. I think it's good that folks weren't just immediately saying, oh, he's from Utah, he'll be great.
Yeah, I don't think the Jazz are going to be that parochial about it. And the other point I would make is that, hat tip to Peter Novak here, who I love to argue with on Twitter, but he's dead on when he said just a little while ago, just temper these names that you hear, because this is a notoriously tight-lipped organization. So a huge percentage of the names we hear in connection with the Jazz are probably not going to be really connected with the Jazz or with this coaching search. So, you know, do I believe that they were on the phone with Dave Rose? Probably not.
And I wasn't saying it like, I wasn't meaning that the Jazz themselves were making these phone calls or anything, but I saw in a couple of these cases, like Dave Rose, I saw a couple legitimate Jazz media members bring that up as a possibility, like people, respected credentialed Jazz
Chris Kovyak.
And, And like that bugged me really bad. But no, yeah. But Dan, you did just kind of say, and I think we like I said, we are a bit over, but this is a meaty subject. A few names that you guys might think, just as possibilities, and like you said, the Jazz are very tight-lipped, and we may not hear the person's name who's going to be the head coach until the day before it happens. You never know. But who are some others that might be on your guys' radar if you were the Jazz? We'll start with you, and we'll go to Andy then.
Well, there's an obvious one that I'll skip and leave to Andy, because I know he's more of Andy's guy, although, and Andy, I'm talking about Longobardi here, because I assume you're going to want to talk about him. And for the record, I'm a fan, too. Like, he's someone that I would have on my short list. The guy that nobody's talking about, and I would be thrilled if he did get mentioned, whether or not he got the job, I really like Caleb Canales, who briefly was the interim head coach at Portland. Before that, he was the offensive coordinator, I guess, and then, or no, I have this backwards. He was the defensive coordinator, the defensive assistant coach at Portland, and now he's the offensive head coach at Dallas. Has kind of a Spo-like background, very heavy on video scouting, but he's just another guy who's young, bright, seen as an up-and-coming star, has been exposed to a championship organization in Dallas with Rick Carlisle, who's another, for his flaws, and Carlisle has flaws too, by the way, but Carlisle's a guy who, someone who's been exposed to him may have learned something, just like someone exposed to Pop may have learned something. So Canales is a guy that so far, I'm the only person I can find anywhere talking about him, but hopefully that changes. But then I really do like Longobardi too. So Andy, I don't know if you were planning on going there, but I sort of just stole your thunder.
Yeah, no, I mean, Longobardi's not my guy. He's probably Peter Novak's guy. But in terms of a good fit, and with kind of the Dennis Lindsay tie. He's clearly a defensive assistant, and just kind of fits what the Jazz are going for. I wonder about someone with previous head coaching experience, and that's kind of why I worry about Longobardi a little bit. I might go somewhere like a George Karl, like a Van Gundy, someone like that who has that head coaching experience, because I think that has been a problem with Ty Corbin, just because we didn't know what sort of head coach he would be, right? And I think there's a lot to be learned from those previous sorts of experiences. Kevin Ollie and Fred Hoiberg have both been named as college coaches who do have that head coaching experience that have moved, that could move into the NBA. I think all those names are good ones. I've mentioned Scott Skiles in the past, and nobody agrees with me, but he's probably the most defensive coach ever. And so if you want a real defensive foundation on a team, Scott Skiles is your guy. If you want development or those sort of things, maybe that's not the right move. But I think he's an interesting, at least feasible candidate because of that defensive focus.
He's also a hard ass, too. To the point earlier about hard asses, he's also a bit of a hard ass. So
yeah, that's true. Exactly. Definitely, which may or may not help the development part.
Sorry, you were thinking about Lionel Hollins.
Yeah, I think that you see those same issues at 5,000 feet that you have with Ty Corbin. Mm-hmm. And that, for a front office that's trying to figure out how to deal with the coaching staff, I don't know that it makes sense to hire the guy who was fired just because he had issues with his previous front office.
And some of the same issues, by the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah, and actually, the reason why I don't expect they'll go the direction of a Hollins or a George Karl or even a Van Gundy, although for the record, I would be thrilled if they got either of the Van Gundys, and Jeff and Dennis have worked together in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I think that's unlikely is just because it sounds like they will. For one thing, they're not going to go after anyone that's super spendy. For another thing, I think they want someone who will kind of come in and grow up with the guys a little bit. Although I don't know, maybe that's just. My perception and the way I'm thinking about it, because as I think about what Dennis laid out yesterday as his criteria for a good coach, that wasn't on the list, so maybe that's something we're all just making up. But when I think about it, I'm thinking about these dudes who, are going to be the next generation of Eric Spoelstra, Frank Vogel types, who sort of make a name for themselves as they go along. And that's what Longobardi, by the way, you know, he had a great interview when he started in Phoenix where he basically said, the reason this opportunity appealed to me is because I realized that if I'm ever going to be a head coach, I'm not going to inherit a championship team. I'm going to be a head coach at a team where I'm going to have to build from the ground up. So coming here and doing that with Jeff Hornacek at Phoenix will give me valuable expertise. So that's why I sort of picture that type of coach coming in and taking the role. But if Jeff Van Gundy wants to prove me wrong, by all means, I'll give him a ride from the airport.
Yeah, Jeff would probably be my number one candidate at the top of my list. I do personally place a bit of an importance, especially for a young team like this Jazz team, on previous head coaching experience. I know some people think that both Van Gundy's, especially Stan, really are kind of a bit loudmouthed and occasionally a bit foolish and things like that. But, you know, personally, in my opinion, I think Jeff has the far better opinions of the two, if you ask me. And you know, he's part of the reason he's a loudmouth is because he's on TV paid to talk. I really think that he did talk,
by the way, about how he thinks Gordon Hayward is about to get overpaid. So that's one thing to watch for he's a real candidate.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, it's certainly worth noting when he said anything specific about the team. I think that I saw a lot of inexperience and a lot of need for maturation in the Jazz this season. And I think bringing somebody in who already has the experience, who the players are going to be able to, like, anybody who was watching TNT the other night, was that last night or the other night, hearing Shaq's comments, which were kind of hypocritical because of the way Shaq was as a player. But he was talking about, you know, you hear a coach that's been there, and, you know, not everybody's Phil Jackson, obviously, but you a coach who's been there and who's won things comes into the dressing room and starts telling you stuff, you don't question what he's talking about. And I guess that's the case too. And I may be kind of overstating that whole thing a little bit. And it's not like players just are not going to listen to a coach that hasn't coached in the NBA, for example. But I do place some importance on that. Plus, I think Jeff Van Gundy's one of the best basketball minds who's currently not coaching an NBA basketball team, which would be a little bit of an easier reasoning, but we are quite a bit over our time. This is pretty much a double stuffed Oreo of a Jazz Joel podcast for everyone today. Do you guys have any little closing thoughts going forward, either of you?
I'll just chip in that I mean, you're right about what you just said about credibility in the locker room, and that's one reason why I actually am more worried about the credibility from a standpoint of a Fred Hoiberg or a Kevin Ollie, who only has NCAA coaching experience, than I am about a guy like Messina, who, you know, at a certain point could point to his resume and say, shut the heck up. But that's probably a whole other topic, you know, how NCAA coaches translate to the NBA, so I won't crack that nut. Obviously, you know, whoever the Jazz get is the coach, and for better or worse, we'll enjoy it and we'll follow along and we'll see how it unfolds.
Definitely. Andy, anything else on your end?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point Dan just brought up. It'll be interesting. I noted this on Twitter, but this is the first time the Jazz have undergone a full-fledged coaching search in their time in Utah.
You know, yeah, I saw that.
There's been four coaches in the history of the Utah Jazz. This will be the fifth. All of those took over as midseason replacements, or I guess Frank Layden took over from Tom Nasalky at the very beginning, but he appointed himself coach as he was already general manager. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the organization does with this kind of new thing that no one has ever done.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's a very exciting time to be a Jazz fan right now. You know, whether you agree with the tie thing or not, and whether you agree with some of the candidates who have been brought up, you know, like you say, Andy, this is the first time in the history of the franchise that we've really had this situation, and it you know, it leaves the door open for a really exciting future should a great person be brought in. So yeah, I think we're going to keep tabs on this. This may be a longer going process. We had such a good conversation today that if the window's still open next week, I think we may very well have the same crew come back and do a little more speculation on these sort of things. And once we've heard a little bit more rumors and information and whatnot. So thanks to Andy and Dan once again for joining me. And this has been this week's Jazz Joel podcast.